I'm Leslie, I'm an addict. I'm really pleased to be in a meeting, even though it's me that's sharing. And, you know, this is such a big meeting. And Robert said to me before the meeting, oh, you've done a chair here recently, haven't you? And I hope it isn't too recently. Actually, there are a lot of people here that I don't recognise. and actually, Charlie asked me a while ago if I'd do a chair. And I said, oh, no, I think I did one there sort of fairly recently. And then a few more months went by and I thought, oh, I'll get Charlie to come and do a chair at my meeting. And I did. And then he said, oh, and while I'm here, you know, will you do a chair for me at Trafalgar Square? So I kind of then felt I couldn't say no. So here I am. I'm really grateful to be in recovery. And just recently, I've really been thinking, you know, what a precious thing it is to be clean and to be in recovery. And there seems to be such a threat to that in the kind of wider world, you know. Abstinence doesn't mean abstinence anymore, and recovery doesn't, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't mean recovery anymore, you know. And I feel that we're really lucky that we have a real understanding about addiction and recovery and the things that you can do to kind of make you whole in the world. And you know, and that's been a long journey for me. And this morning's Just for Stay reading was about gossiping, but one of the it's, you know, it was saying I can't remember, I meant to read it before I came in again. I thought it was such a good reading this morning, about keeping on coming back and not getting caught up in gossip and stuff, and saying that by working the program and practicing these principles, you know, that we will be able to deal with kind of difficult situations and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, we don't need to get caught up in it. And that, for me, I read that and I thought, that's my experience. You know, I've come into recovery. I've worked a program to the best of my ability, and it really has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I had, you know, when I came in, I couldn't have told you what that would be. I'd spent about, when I got clean, my boyfriend was in prison, and I was doing this big heroic thing that I'm going to sort everything out so that when he comes out of prison, we're going to have this wonderful home and we're going to have loads of money and everything's going to be wonderful, you know. And none of that happened, you know. What happened was I just struggled sort of more and more and more, and probably got in, you know, probably got involved. I imagine that this happens to most women. If they have a guy who goes to prison, all his mates start hitting on you, you know. It's just really horrible, you know. And it was just a really, really difficult time. And I had a little boy and I didn't know anything about recovery, and I decided that I was going to get myself together. And I did everything I could to get myself together, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I used a bit, you know, I didn't even really use. The using wasn't the problem by the time I got to NA, really. Drinking had started to become a big problem. But you know, I wasn't using Class A drugs. I was smoking a bit of dope and I was drinking, and the drinking was getting more and more out of control. But for me, that was really the worst period of my life. It was the most difficult. I felt as though I didn't have anything between me and the rest of the world. And I just couldn't deal with interactions with people. My family were delighted. Leslie, you know, you're not using, you've got yourself together. They were so pleased. But it was, inside, it was just awful, you know. Every day I used to wake up and, you know, really, really think, not another day. You know, when you're using full on, really a lot of that, you know, you're sick, you're getting money, you're scoring, you're using, you're bitching with other people, you're you know, it's like a full-time thing. But if you're an addict and you're not really using, it's just really, really, from my experiences, it's really, really painful. And as I say, you know, I started drinking, and I started drinking more and more and more. And I had a little boy who, by the time I got clean, he was 9, you know, he'd been held hostage with me by some guys who burst into our flat with knives. That was a hideous time. He'd been in police stations with me, been dealers with me. He'd sat outside the bathroom door saying, Mummy, when are you coming out? You know. But in a lot of ways, you know, that last bit was very difficult for him and for me. And one day I saw something on television about 12-step recovery. And it reminded me that about 3 years before, I'd met someone in a magistrate's court who said, I don't use anymore, I go to these meetings. Come to this meeting with me on Friday. And I went to this meeting. It was in a hospital called St. Mary Abbott's. And it was a Friday night meeting. And I went along and I thought, what am I doing here, you know? And actually, the one thing I can picture the girl saying it. I mean, this is a long time ago. This girl said, I can't decide whether I should kneel when I pray. And I thought, my God, you know, I could not believe that. So, you know, I could talk about all sorts of things, you know, using, you know, horrible things that happen to you when you use physically, and just horrible things. But, you know, someone talking about praying in public, I just thought, you know, what is this? It's really, really not for me. And I sort of went away and didn't think about it again. But at this time, you know, 3 years later, I saw this program on television and I thought, I've been to one of those meetings. You know, I've been to one of those meetings. Because by then I felt I'd tried everything I could do to sort my life out. And I'd been completely unable to. And I felt I'd tried everything and it hadn't worked. And I thought, well, you know, I can go to one of those meetings and see. And I went to this meeting, and for me, I mean, it was a kind of miracle, really. You know, there was a girl who'd been in my flat the last time it had been raided. There was the guy I'd had my first ever hit in his flat when I was 19. there was a woman who was sharing, and I didn't recognise her at first, but she was when we'd been pregnant at the same time, and we were both using when we were pregnant, and we were each other's kind of, what is that, antenatal, do you call it? You know, advice. You know, I don't remember ever going to an antenatal clinic when I was pregnant. You know, me and this woman used to just talk to each other about, you know, what it was safe to do and what not, and what the likely consequences were. And I only recognised her when this guy shared at the back, and he's got, his name's Chip. I think quite a lot of people know him, mm-hmm. And I'd used with him as well. And I went out for coffee with him after the meeting, and this guy Chip said to me, "So, you know, how are you doing? Are you using?" And I said, I'm only drinking and smoking a bit of dope. Because everyone else, you know, my family was saying, God, that is wonderful, you know. And Chip said, oh, this is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. And I thought, you know, well, that may be a problem for you, but unbelievably, you know, when I was on my knees, that may be a problem for you, but I'm okay with it, you know. I went back to that meeting every week for about 6 months. I stopped the drink. I carried on smoking dope. Unbelievably, it made me incredibly paranoid, very uncomfortable in my own skin. But I just couldn't put it down, you know. And one day the same guy said to me, you know, what other meetings do you go to? And I said, I come to this meeting every week. And he said, you know, what we say in NA is 90 meetings in 90 days. And do you know, I don't know whether they didn't say it in that meeting or whether I didn't hear it. And I think that's very interesting, you know. And my My sponsor said to me a couple of years ago, you know, the reason we have to keep going to meetings is because we find it difficult to hear things. And when we hear it, we find it difficult to retain it, you know. And it's very easy to kind of forget all the good stuff that, you know, you take for granted if you're going to meetings regularly and hearing it all the time. And anyway, so I started going to more meetings and I picked up a white key ring, and, you know, in a day at a time since then I've been clean, you know, and I feel very, very blessed and very lucky about that. And in fact, this last week I had a kidney stone, which started off, I was meeting a sponsee, and I got a pain in my back, and I thought, oh God, I really over-exercised yesterday, you know, I've pulled a muscle, and then I sort of carried on, and then I thought, oh no, I've got really bad indigestion. Oh, if I move around, I'll be okay. And then as it went on, I thought, fuck, I'm really, really in pain. And anyway, it ended up, I thought, if I just go home and lay down, I'll be okay. And I went home, laid down, and started crying. And my husband called an ambulance, which I thought was over dramatic. But anyway, they took me to hospital, and they went through all of this stuff. And I hope this isn't a shocking thing to say, what I'm going to say. And I was in unbelievable pain for about 6 hours. It was the most painful thing that's ever happened to me. And eventually the doctor, you know, they did all these tests, and the doctor said, yeah, I think you've got a kidney stone, and we're going to give you some painkillers. And they gave me two painkillers, one of which was liquid morphine. And I looked at my husband and said, fuck it, I'm taking it. You know, I was in so much pain, I just didn't know what to do. It just had to stop. And actually, I didn't even feel it, you know, but the pain did stop. And there were two parts, I mean, the pain side won, but the other part of it was, I've been clean for 30 years, and I have never taken a codeine tablet, I don't know, and anything. I've never taken anything mood-altering in all that time. And I'm very, very wary and careful about that, you know. And especially, you know, I've known people who haven't started using because they thought, I'll start using, you know, they've been in hospital, they've had operations, they've been given pain relief, and somehow, you know, have got sort of caught up in that. So I'm very, very wary about that. I'm just saying that, you know, that anyway, I think I'm safe, you know, I've sort of made it through a week since then. So being in recovery is really important to me, you know. I came to meetings, and honestly, I had really no idea who I was. I could describe myself in different ways, you know. I'm an addict. I'm a mother. I'm a this. I'm, you know, these different. I couldn't put it together and sort of feel like a whole person. And once I got clean, I really started following suggestions. And I had a sponsor. Actually, for a while I'd had this sponsor, and she and I just never told her I was using. You know, she kept saying to me, "So when was the last time that you used?" Because it's really important in NA, you know, clean time birthday. And I used to say, "Can't quite remember," you know. And she never like pulled me on it or anything. You know, I picked up a white key ring and I sort of copped to it, and I started working the steps with her. And she was the woman who was in that meeting who I'd been pregnant with. And she'd been so tricky and so difficult when we were using. And I thought, I'll ask her to be my sponsor because she'll really pull me up when I'm, you know. I that's kind of what I thought I needed, someone to go, you're doing that and you're not doing that, you know, be really kind of harsh on me. But actually, she was completely different to that. She was really, really an incredibly loving woman. Very accepting, very very caring. And I started working through the steps with her. And, you know, it was very easy. I mean, I'm sure for most of us, you know, it's so easy to start to see powerlessness and unmanageability. I was powerless over everything and fighting it with it. You know, I was fighting everything. And early recovery for me was, you know, it was incredibly difficult, but incredibly wonderful. And I can look back and think of all the little things that happened, the little sort of miracles that made me think I'm going in the right direction, you know. Instead of what my life had seemed up to that point, that everything I did was a struggle, it was difficult, there were problems, it didn't work out, you know, I'd try something, it would fall to pieces. Things just started falling into place, you know. Even simple, you know, if I was going to a meeting, I'd get to the bus stop and the bus would come, you know. I'd see that as a little sign, you're going in the right direction, you know. And, you know, loads of really fantastic things, happened to me. And I got to know some people by getting involved in service, really, you know, at my home group, and then kind of in the wider fellowship. There are people I started doing service with who are really good friends of mine now, and actually one of them I work with now. I was really up for it, you know. I was really up for recovery. I was really up for getting involved in NA. All the people that I really admired were kind of involved in NA. You know, this guy who was my best friend used to coordinate the rota for the office, the NA office. And, you know, and I did office duty with him, and we did meeting commitments together. I've tried to stay kind of involved in NA. And when I was a couple of years clean, one of my friends asked me to go to Brixton Prison and do, you know, go in and do the meeting in Brixton Prison with him. And at that point, there weren't sort of guidelines, you know, about, you know, men in men's prisons, women in women's prisons. And in fact, we used to go in with big bags of sweets and loads of cigarettes, you know, so it was a very attractive meeting. And, you know, what was interesting was, you know, at that time, you'd go in and take a meeting and no one would have heard of NA. You know, when I started doing that, no one had heard of NA. You know, the guys used to say, oh, hi, miss, are you a social worker? You know, it was very, very unusual if someone came to that meeting and they'd heard of Narcotics Anonymous. Mm. And over the time that I did that, you know, more and more people started to become aware of it. And then a bit later, you know, a kind of 12-step recovery program started. You know, like a 12-step treatment program started up in prisons, and that really, really, you know, that really, really made a difference. So that was a really good thing for me. And I've done a lot of H&I in recovery. I take a meeting in a woman's prison now. I might say a bit more about that in a little while. For me, H&I is about, you know, the heart. I mean, I really... I feel very lucky that that wasn't my story, you know, that I was kind of in and out of prison, like a lot of the women that I talk to. I meet a lot of very sort of brave women, you know, who are doing their best in very, very difficult circumstances in prison. I've done H&I and detoxes, you know. I just think doing H&I is very much about sort of the truth. You know, you're meeting people, or I'm meeting people who are where I was when I first got to NA, you know. I want a way out of where I am now, and I don't know what it is, and I don't know if this is it, but I just can't carry on, you know, doing what I've been doing. And I find that, you know, very... very important to me. And the other service that I do, my home group, when I first started going to my home group, they used to say at the end of the month, oh, we're having a committee meeting, and if you want to find out about this group, come along to our committee meeting. And I used to go along to that committee meeting, and it was all guys, and there was one woman, and I can remember her name, and I can remember what she looks like, and I thought she was absolutely wonderful because she was really assertive. She could, you know, she could talk about money. She was the treasurer, you know, she could talk about the money. She could put her opinions forward in a very articulate way, you know. I used to go into meetings. I went to a meeting once with my son. Several times I went to meetings with my son because, you know, there was just me and him, you know. And one day he said to me, "You don't sound like the other people, Mum. You don't always make sense in what you're talking about, you know." And this woman was so wonderful and articulate. And I thought, God, I'd love to be like her. You know, I'd really love to be like her. And I sort of look back on that because what happened was I did some temp work for a few years and. And then I got a permanent job, and then through that permanent job, they had a scheme where they trained people to be accountants, and I became an accountant, and that's what I did for a long time. I did that for a long time in recovery, and through that, I've done a lot of treasury commitments in NA, and particularly around conventions, which has been absolutely. That's another really fantastic thing to do, getting involved in a convention, because you spend like a year. In committees where you all disagree with each other, and you know, and it seems as though nothing's happening and nothing's getting done, and then you get nearer the time, and suddenly everyone gets really serious about things, and it all starts to come together, and then it's like I always think of it as like you're giving a gift to the fellowship. You know, the doors open and everyone comes in, and then everyone's just having a really good time. It's like you've put on this. Sort of fantastic party. I'm looking at Dean because he's doing the London convention, which is always a great thing. So they're my sort of two sides, really. You know, that sort of obsessive getting everything right side of things. You know, I can put into that financy side and H&I's, you know, about how I feel and the heart, thank you. So that's what I did. That's kind of how I came into NA. And a lot has happened to me in recovery, you know, an enormous amount. I worked, you know, I carried on working through the steps. I wrote a step 4, which was after getting clean, was one of the most healing things I've done for myself. Writing down the things that had happened to me and actually letting myself feel the feelings, because I'd spent my whole life doing things and walking away from the last stupid thing I'd done, beating myself up for, you know, being so stupid or hopeless or, you know, whatever judgment I put on myself. And I just wrote and just let myself feel how I felt about things. And there were some really... When I was a child, I used to have this recurring nightmare, and it used to absolutely terrify me. And when I was writing my step 4, I went, you know, it does make you feel quite tired, all that kind of stuff. I went and laid down and fell asleep, and I had this nightmare that I used to have when I was a child. And I don't know, you know, there was something about that that really... made me feel as though I was coming together, you know, that I'd been this child and now I was this adult and I was starting to come together. And I didn't think that I'd share a lot of the stuff with my sponsor. I mean, you know, I'm not some big gangster or anyone. I'm not someone who's done, like, big, wild things, you know. I just did lots and lots of really stupid things over and over again. I did lots of stuff that was very damaging to myself and to the people around me. But there were things that I thought I wouldn't share with my sponsor. But I, you know, I sat down, I started talking to her, she started laughing about things, identifying things. She gave me some real insight into some of the things that I was, you know, that I was reading out. When I walked away from it, I felt as though I'd taken acid. I could just see. So, you know, so clearly that I had built a wall between me and the rest of the world so that I could keep you away, so that you wouldn't be able to hurt me, so that you wouldn't be able to know hopeless and stupid I was, you know. And I couldn't imagine how I could ever change that. You know, that was, it was so clear in my mind. And then step six and seven came along, and my son started playing up, and he got drunk and got arrested a couple of times. And I thought, my God, you know, he's going to be an addict, and you know, that was the worst thing that I could imagine, really, you know. And really, what all that did was push me into meetings and to share. And what I did was, I really, really let go, you know. I really shared about what was happening. I was so frightened, you know. I was in meetings crying, and what that did was got me close to people, you know. When I got to the other side of it, I thought, I've opened myself up and talked to people, you know. I've let them know who I am and how I feel about things, and you know, and that was a wonderful thing. And you know, and I got to 8 and 9, and there were some amazing coincidences around that. What was important was, for me, was, you know, I talked to my sponsor and I said, I can't even imagine, you know, what amends would be with my parents, or what I would say to them, you know, because we have no the conversation I had with my father, you know, ever had with my father was, how's the car going? You know, that was really the sort of depth of conversation. How's the car going? And my sponsor said, you know, I think maybe you need to sort of just get to know them. Maybe the amend is just to sort of get to know them. And various things happened where that did happen, actually. I sort of started to get to know them a bit. What really happened was, first my father got really ill, and he was ill for a long time, and I spent a lot of time with him. And particularly, you know, my mother needed a break, so my sister would take my mother away and I'd go and stay with my father. And, you know, it was a very difficult time. It's very difficult for him. You know, he had something called COPD, and he was a very fit man, which actually meant instead of having a heart attack, he just slowly choked to death. It was really, really awful. But I spent a lot of time with him, and I was with him when he died. And, you know, and I can remember coming to this meeting and saying that was, you know, that in some ways the most wonderful and the most awful thing that had ever happened to me, you know, but I feel so grateful that, you know, I was with him. And then, and then after he died, a couple of years later, my mother got ill, and she came to live with me, and, you know, she got progressively ill, and she died, you know, she died in my house, and I was with her as well. I'm not sure that I'm saying, and that is how I made amends, but, you know, what it did for me was it was a chance for me to really experience my emotions in a very, very deep way, and to really understand a lot of things about love. And I'm very grateful that I had the chance to have those experiences. And so now I'm sort of the eldest person in the family. You know, I've got a sister, and I've got some nephews, and I've got a son. And I've been so lucky with my son, because he had such a terrible upbringing. And his view is, don't worry about it. I'm happy with the person that I am. And though, you know, what happened to me when I was a child has made me who I am today. And he's got this lovely girlfriend, and they're very sort of anti-materialistic and vegetarian. She's vegan, actually. You know, they're so super lovely. And they got this little dog, which is just the loveliest little dog in the world. You know, there's so much love in their house. And then they had a baby last year as well. So I'm a generally what I say is, my son's got a daughter rather than I'm a grandmother. You know, it sounds a lot better. But, you know, I've just been so lucky in recovery. You know, I've been going out with this guy for a long time. When I left my job, I was a civil servant. I was working in the civil service. If I'd have left without being married, my civil service pension, which is quite a lucky thing to have, would have died with me. So I got married, you know, I got married last year. And luckily by then I didn't really have any relatives. So I just had a whole load of recovery friends. And I'd had, I mean, out of everyone who came, there were only four people who weren't in recovery, who were some people I used to work with in the civil service. And actually one of these guys was a drugs investigator at one time in his career. And so at the beginning of the wedding, I said to him, I'd just like to say, before, you know, we go into the wedding, after the sort of service itself, but before we were going into speeches and things, I'm not quite sure what people are going to say in speeches, but I just think I would warn you that I had a bit of a, you know, I had a bit of a sort of wild youth, and I don't know what they're going to say. And he said, that's all right, Leslie. I was in a bit of a motorbike gang when I was younger. I thought, yeah, that's... you know, but luckily, everyone was very discreet. So I'm very lucky. I'm very passionate about recovery. I love being in recovery. I love the people that I know in recovery. It's just such a wonderful thing. And thank you for listening. Thank you.